Hello and welcome to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soups. Time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe to the program. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. We are going to hand out the our award ballots for the 2023-2024 NBA season. We're going to hand out a few awards ourselves, and then in segment two, we're going to be joined by Mark Stein, who will help us fill out the rest of our ballots. But first, the Raptors close out the home finale last night at Scotiabank Arena with a 140-123 loss to the Indiana Pacers. Blake, how are you feeling?
I feel all right. It was a little, the last home game of the season is always a little, particularly when you know it's the last home game of the season ahead of time. Usually the last home game of the season, you're not sure, because if you win, you keep going. it's a little bittersweet. It's obviously, not the worst thing in the world to turn the page on this season after a couple more games and a couple more shows, but I don't know, kind of hanging around everyone. You won't be back at the arena until like October.
A lot of lingering afterwards, just making sure you said hi and goodbye to everybody.
Yeah. Not for me. I bounced back to the Blue Jays game after, because they were I did Jays media. Jays media starts at 3 p.m. for a 7 o'clock game. So I went there before the game, came to Raptors in time for Darko and watched the game. And then it was only the seventh inning when the Raptors game ended. So I went back and caught the part of the eighth and the ninth at Rogers Center. This is the nice thing about having press passes.
Yeah.
Just sneak in and watch from the concourse, go meet up with friends.
Okay, so most people just change the channel. You literally physically
changed the channel. Yeah.
For me, it was a lot of like lingering around after the game, make sure to talk to people, talking to even security guards, staffers. Like I said in the reaction show, but it's like, at the end of every season, you do really appreciate like the enormity of like the entire enterprise around it. A lot of people make up this whole thing, and I'm going to miss like just being in that environment. The game itself, though, that's different, man.
Although even last night, like the game, and I won't like give away specifics here, but like you and I spent separately good chunks of that game watching with people who, in a game that mattered a little more, wasn't the last game of the season, you probably can't sit and watch a game like that and spend a quarter with this person or a quarter with that person. Yeah. And like, not only does it make you a smarter basketball fan and make you better at our jobs, but it's also fun. And like, when we talk about the enterprise around it, it's not just, hey, every media is there and we're all taking like an end of season pick or whatever.
Oh, I definitely did a few of those.
Yeah. I got one or two in pregame as well.
Nice. Nice.
But it's also like, it's all of that environment. And just like, I don't know, it kind of like the culture around covering basketball, which is like, similar to basketball culture, but I don't know, talking to scouts, talking to coaches, talking to agents, stuff like that. It's, we're going to go a long time without that, especially like I already know I'm not doing summer league because I'll be on Blue Jays duty. Right. So for me, this is like a firm, like none of this until October. Mm-hmm. It's, I am not upset that I will not have to watch certain types of basketball games for a little bit. It sucks to, you won't be back in the barn for what, 6-7 months.
Well, no, that's the thing. It's like, it felt like summer league in that way, right? Like summer league,
like summer league in a lot of ways, buddy.
Yeah. It's been a long summer league essentially for this team. But, I remember last year when I went to summer league for the first time, it was like a really cool experience because for the first half, I just got to sit with Bobby Webster like the whole time. We just chatted about whatever. And then Masai came over and we sat for like a quarter as well. And then you go over there and you talk to like a scout or you go talk to some assistant coach of another team. And it's just like, whoa, like you're in this moment. Like that's kind of what it felt like last night. Because again, you didn't have to focus as much on the nitty gritty of a 140-123 game. I mean, yeah.
You know who else wasn't focused on the nitty gritty of that game and still won by 17 points is the Indiana Pacers.
I was going to say, they didn't even look like, that good. They scored 140.
This is a Raptors show, and we should probably talk about some of what the Raptors did. But my biggest takeaway, especially early in that game, is this Pacers team is toast in the playoffs. They are not a playoff. Like, they are not a playoff-ready style of basketball team. I like Nesmith and Nembhard as individual defenders. This team can't defend the zombie Raptors at the end of the, like Javon Freeman Liberty had like the quarter of his life just carving them up again in the paint at will.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, man. I wish I liked this Pacers team more because they're fun and the offense is cool. And obviously I want Pascal to do well and Nembhard to do well. And I like Tyrese, but I don't know, man. It's been too much of this since Halliburton got back.
Yeah, I think for the Pacers, like when they're good, they hit this like super high pace, and they have a lot multiple ball handlers, and they make you rotate. Raptors were definitely like chasing shadows last night, especially in the second half. I thought the Pacers got into a much better rhythm. But also at the same time, like, you just watch the game, and it's been the case all year with the Pacers. Anyone who's tuned into the Pacers is like, they have no physicality across the board. I mean, like, they're looking at Pascal to be like a stopper for them a lot of the time. You know, we just know that that's not the case. Yeah. Miles Turner, I feel like he just looks lazy.
I mean, I like Turner as like the rim protector slash floor spacer,
No, I just mean, like, is he, like...
Going McLovin from role models here. No. I like the idea of Coke more than I like Coke itself.
Yeah, that's Miles Turner. Like, he's, like, fading along the three-point line. You know, mostly not... Like, he can be a more impactful offensive player than he is defensively right now for me. Like, he's not a dominant rebounder. He's not a guy who's, like, constantly protecting the rim. Feels like guys get around him at the basket all the time. It's just like... I don't know. It's not playoff basketball type of
No, and here's game. The thing. You mentioned that when the Pacers are at their best, they're playing with this really high pace. Well, what's the best way to kickstart your pace? It's to get stops and come down with defensive rebounds. We know that they're not going to get stops a ton. Like, personnel-wise, even if this team was, like, more disciplined and more locked in, they would not be a good defensive team. They would just be a little bit better. But they're also a really bad defensive rebounding team. They're, like, bottom five in defense. Right. The Raptors had 16 offensive rebounds last night out of 45 opportunities. Mm-hmm. So more than a third of their misses they were coming down with. I don't know. And, again, this is a Raptors team. Like, Kelly Olynyk's at center, and Malik Williams is the backup center, and, like, Jalen McDaniels is still seeing the odd minute at center. Like, that is not the Raptors are not the type of team that should be killing you on the offensive glass. And I don't know, maybe they just didn't take the Raptors seriously, and, like, they have won 8 of 11 and have the number 2 offense during that stretch. But, like, I don't know, man. It's hard after the last couple months to think they're just going to find a switch to turn on defense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think that that's really within them, and also a really young team as well. Mm-hmm. And first trip through the playoffs, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of teams obviously will have to respect what they do offensively, but and they are obviously very special offensively. They scored 140 last night, and we're not even saying they played particularly well. On the Raptors side, Kelly played great. RJ continues to be really productive going to the basket. Gary really struggled. I can't believe it. It was tough. It was a tough one for Gary. He bailed it out a little bit in the fourth quarter, but over the course of the game, he was really struggling.
Gary finally got me to, like, say really nice things about him on the show, and then that's what happens after.
Yeah, there was a couple moments for Gary where he was really frustrated about not getting calls, and he would just, like, stay on the floor. And I was like, all right, man, like, you know, Dark will call timeout after one of those, too. It was like, you just got to focus. Two questions I had out of this game. Ochai, 0 for 6 from the field. I liked his defense. I mean, obviously, that's going to be the major sticking point. Are you a little bit disappointed in Ochai in terms of just extended opportunity here, and you're not seeing much offensively at all?
I mean, I thought we were before the hip injury, and I don't want to chalk it up to the hip injury, but he had those couple games. There's the one game we watched together where he had like 6 assists, and we saw a little bit more playmaking juice out of him. And then there was a game shortly after that where he finished in the paint a ton. He had I think he had 16 or 18 points, and almost all of them came in the paint.
Yeah.
So he's showing flashes or whatever, but yeah, I mean, largely he is what I expected coming into this year. And I'm sure in acquiring him, it was about the 2.5 years left he has on his deal, and they see some stuff they can do with him in the offseason that you just can't maybe do on the fly in season. But yeah, he's been exactly who he was in Utah, which is a really interesting defender who isn't all the way there yet defensively, but you see the obvious tools. And offensively, if he's not knocking down the open corner threes, he's like really not doing a lot for you in the half court.
Yeah. I haven't watched a lot of his like warm-ups and stuff like that. I do think there's a slight, I wouldn't even say hitch in his jump shot, but he kind of like rotates the ball a little bit while he's going up to shoot it. And it's, I don't know. I would love to find like a more fluid way for him to shoot the ball a little bit more naturally. And I think the arc is a little bit flat too, just watching it. But yeah, I do think offensively, I mean, look, you only scored 2 points against the Pacers. You know, I think that does show you a lot in terms of what your creation ability is. Defensively, I'm liking him quite a bit, actually. The fact that he can like take off. Like, you know, he'll be guarding against the drive, and he'll just like jump off 1 foot, and like he had one where he blocked Tyrese yesterday, and it was pretty impressive to watch that portion. But yeah, as you mentioned, offensively, there's just got to be more. The other question I had was Javon Freeman Liberty. quarter of his life? Best quarter of his life? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, best quarter of his NBA life anyway. Yeah. He drops 14 in that first quarter, ends up with a career high 20 points. Obviously cooled off a little bit after that first quarter. But I think, you know, in that game, you see what the Raptors have liked in him. You know, you and I both liked him going back to preseason. Mm-hmm. He showed a lot in that kind of limited role as like, hey, that's a guy who can get to the paint. And even if he's not, maybe not a threat yet to finish in the paint, the act of getting to the paint is really, really valuable. Right. I think you saw that a little bit last night. He obviously is a guy who benefits from having RJ out there, or I mean, him and Quickly aren't going to play a lot of minutes together. Mm-hmm. But with RJ, someone who can kind of draw the defense's attention, maybe get that first rotation going, and then he can attack the seam when it gets over to him. I think you know, I like him. He's a guy that I've liked. He's shown in the G League. He was capable of getting 30. He even had a 40 piece in the G League this year. You know, it was a weird season for him because there was that early season window where the Raptors had basically Dennis was the only healthy guard.
Yep. But that was weird.
But Javon was dealing with like a really like on and off ankle thing in the G League. And just couldn't stay on the floor. And then like Grady went down there and they didn't play together a lot. And anyway, then it hit a point where there looked like there was an opportunity at the NBA level, mm-hmm. and Javon wasn't getting the call. And I thought he started slipping into some bad habits in the G League and we see this all the time in the G League, is sometimes a guy, if you think you've shown what you need to show in the G League and you're not getting a call, mm-hmm. what do I got to do?
Yeah,
and then there started to be, you know, some 35-point games where I was like, okay, that's a 35-point game. It's still 35 points, but, you know, that wasn't necessarily within the team concept. It's maybe not driving the team's winning. To get that 30, but then he figured it out. I don't know if someone talked to him or he just kind of saw it on his own, but there was like a 2-week stretch where he was just kind of a purely a bucket getter. Mm. And then he kind of found his way back to, okay, how do I score within a Raptors ecosystem and continue that, like the growth they're challenging to do is like, hey, be a little bit more of a point guard. Like he did double his assist rate this year in the G League over last year. So I like it. I like where he's at. I like what he's shown. You know, he's not going to drop 20 every night, but even last night, he had 8 rebounds last night too, and that's something that
I thought he was pretty active
for a 6'3 guy. And you know, you and I have been critical about in some of these games where barely anyone's playing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys aren't as effortful as you might think, not hitting the floor and stuff like that. And he's not that. He's been the exception for the most part. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think look, his contract runs into next year. He's only got 100K guaranteed, but I think this is absolutely a guy that when you line up the offseason and what training camp should look like next year, he is coming into their summer program with a leg up for one of those, you know, 13th, 14th, 15th man roster spots.
Yeah, I think the question is he going to be good enough to be your backup point guard? Because the Raptors clearly have a hole there.
I mean, I don't think he's a point guard is the thing. Okay. It's like he improved as a point guard this year, but like...
But he's not really a shooting guard either because he's not a prolific three-point shooter.
I mean, they really like his shooting. His shooting,
He was 2-3 last night.
And like I know that he had like a 2-of-22 stretch or something like that at the NBA level this year, but they really like his shooting. And in the G League, he was really, really good. Like he hit, what did he hit? Sorry, I lost it here. He hit 36% of his threes this year in the G League, but almost all those are above the break pull-ups. Mm-hmm. Like he was steady, like very much having to create his own shot. You know, some people around the team have told me like in practices and stuff like that, like he's automatic. Like if you give him space, he's really, so I think they see some development path there. I guess like you could technically be the backup point guard because they're going to run so much Scotty and bench.
Yeah, sure. And now you have RJ too, who can run a little bit of point.
And like the point guard might not need to play point guard that much. I think probably it's more realistic for him to, and look, you, as a player, you got to target like, I want the backup point guard job. You got to target, I want the starting point guard job.
I mean, let's one step at a time.
Yeah. But realistically, like if he could be your, you know, 13th, 14th man, we're like, whether it's fifth guard or sixth guard, whatever you want to call it. I think that's a reasonable path for him, which like player development wise, turning a two-way guy into that would be,
huge.
It would be a success. And it's something, you know, he's probably the only guy on the team you'd say that about from this kind of last quarter season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm always happy to see him take this opportunity. I thought the last couple of games, there was just way too much putting his head down and barreling to the basket. And, and realistically his athleticism, his size at this level and his craft, that's not going to be enough.
No.
Right. But I thought it was a much better performance. He did score within the offense. A lot of hustle plays as well last night. So happy for Javon. And
good cutter, good offensive rebounder. Sure. So, like, again, those are skills that if he was 6'7", 6'8", he'd have a spot in the league, no doubt. At 6'3", you got to be a little choosier about it.
Yeah, but I thought it was solid. That's all that could be said about last night's performance. The three games left in the season, The Raptors are in New York tonight. We'll talk about that game later on. And then they finish with two games in Miami. So I'm actually very curious to see what game 82 looks like.
South Beach on three.
Oh, my God. Not even 1-2-3 Cancun. They're like literally 30 minutes away from Cancun at that
point. I got to talk to our bosses, by the way. Michael Grange pulls the Brooklyn-Miami-Miami road trip to end the season.
If Grange has a suntan,
we couldn't do the show from the show from the road today, tomorrow, and Monday.
Yeah, I was thought of just doing from home. Okay,
send us to Miami. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Award ballots. This is what we're here to do. Yeah. So, you know, we're gonna go through a couple awards just with the two of us, and then we're gonna take a break. Go to Mark Stein. We saved the big ones for Mark Stein: Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and of course MVP. Those will be in segment two. But right now, I'm going to start with Most Improved Player, an award I really like because it does take an opportunity to recognize a lot of players. I know a friend of the program, David Thorpe, did a really extensive one with Zach Lowe. I was listening to that one in preparation for this one as well. I liked a lot of their candidates. But also, at one point, they said Dean Wade, and I'm like, all right, guys, like, this is too much. I, like, literally took my earpod out. I was like, no way, man. But in any case, Blake, who do you have on your Most Improved Player ballot?
Yeah, this one's always, I think, the toughest to vote on because there are a couple of different ways to improve, right? Like, there's the standard, like, hey, you were a lottery pick, and in year three, you take the jump everyone's been waiting for you. And that, like, I get it. That guy might be the most improved. That, to me, doesn't really seem like in the spirit of the award. Then there are the guys who, you know, journeymen who haven't really found their niche in league and they find and they run with it. Mm-hmm. That's always a cool story as well. And then there are the two types that we're going to pick between here. And it's a guy like Coby White, who has already been a rotation piece, but now has taken the step to, oh, he's a starting caliber guy, and it's really meaningfully impacted his team. The numbers are better. It looks like everything's clicked for you. And it took till year five or whatever, and you weren't like a high lottery pick, but you got there. So I think, you know, that's a guy who's taken a real step forward. And then where it gets really hard for me to vote is relative to who he was last year, Coby White has improved more.
Mm,
but
I agree.
Tyrese Maxey, who I would vote for if I had a vote.
Okay.
So Tyrese Maxey is my pick. The move he's made,
yeah,
while not as large geographically as Coby White,
sure,
is a more difficult jump to make and a more meaningful jump for the context of that team, where he's gone from a 20-point-a-game, 3-assist guy to 26 points a game, 6.5 assists, and really allowed the 76ers to move off of James Harden and end that saga. And, you know, they didn't play super well with Embiid out, but you saw how well they played with Maxey still there versus when Maxey was also out. I know Maxey has only played 68 games, so maybe that's a hair splitter for you as well. I went Maxey over Coby White, but I really don't think you can make a difference. It's just the jump Maxey made is a tougher one to make and more important to what the outlook for the 76ers is. Right. But love Coby White's season.
No, for sure. I mean, look, this is splitting hairs. I had Coby White for me. I think he's cooled off a little bit, but there was certainly stretches of the season where when Zach LaVine went down, Coby White really took that advantage and like ran with it, and he just had a lot of, you know, really impressive play, and I think the Bulls got to be really happy with him. That's got to be, like, probably their most promising thing to come out of this year. I mean, by the way, did you see that out the backboard alley-oop by Torrey Craig and Andre Drummond?
I saw someone tweet the screen cap that it looks like the cover of a Disney movie where someone got their basketball talent from an ancient relic, and it's like Andre Drummond is – Torrey Craig has no idea what's going on, how he's up that high, and Drummond is behind him like the spirit of this relic. Ridiculous stuff.
Except this is reality, and they were down, I believe, 9 points in like the first half, and it's like, yo, first off, why are you serving yourself? Yeah, exactly.
Man, anyway. Okay, honorable mentions here. Jalen Williams would have been third on my ballot if I had an actual ballot, and I did want to give honorable mention to Scotty, who only played 60 games. So even if the 65 game limit only applies to certain awards, I think voters will probably use it unofficially for every award. So to get a most improved in such a loaded field when you only played 60 games. So only honorable mention there. And then Isaiah Hartenstein doesn't have a big numbers jump.
Yeah.
Even since Mitchell Robinson went down, his numbers are still only like 10 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, a block or whatever. But to go from a small role to an important bench role, to starting and playing 30 minutes a game and being number one in the league in defensive impact metrics.
That was crazy.
The playmaking's always been there, but they're trusting him with it more. Mm-hmm. I wanted an honorable mention there because I don't know that anyone's like he's the same guy, but that role has scaled in such a huge way. And usually that's where like you guys get exposed, right? It's like you can do that in 15 minutes a game against bench guys, not in 35 minutes a game against starters, and he's done it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, that was also shocking to me when I looked it up on Dunks and Threes. It was like, you know, Jonathan Isaac and Isaiah Hartenstein are like literally one and two.
You're not giving him your deep boy?
No, he's not getting the deep boy. Also, calling him the deep boy sounds terrible, by the way. I hate that name.
You don't want who are you giving the six boy to?
Yeah, six boy is even worse. My God. Yeah, the only thing I would say about Maxey, and okay, so as a Raptor fan, I feel like we've already seen the best of Tyrese Maxey. So I already knew that he had this level to hit. Now, of course, doing it more consistently is something that obviously is deserving recognition. But I also, as a Raptor fan, I'm like, this is who I knew Tyrese Maxey to be all along. So seeing him make this jump this year is not as much. And also, I feel like this is maybe a little unfair, but when Embiid went down, like it's not like he was carrying them in that same degree that I really would have liked to see. However, having said that, though, very deserving candidate. He's been like the leader the whole season. I think he was probably the predicted like winner for this award even coming into it. Scotty, I wanted to recognize. Shane Gwynn, I wanted to recognize as well. Those two guys really made a year three jump and have shown why they're basically one and two for me in that draft class right now. And then Jalen Johnson, who we talked about quite a bit.
Yeah.
But he went from averaging 5 points to 16 points. That's really impressive.
Yeah. Another guy only played 56 games.
Right, right.
So probably going to hurt him on the actual ballots. But yeah, and he was another one that like, I was thirsty in those Pascal rumors in the offseason when the Hawks were said to be interested. And I mean, then you find out that like the Hawks were like, don't think we're putting Jalen Johnson in a trade. And then you see why immediately.
5 to 16 points. Well, that's quite a bit. Okay, next award, Clutch Player of the Year. And it's not going to LeBron James because it's Clutch with a C. All right.
It's Rich Paul every year.
Yeah, I actually would like for these big agencies to do their own award ballots, you know, just for Within Clutch. But in any case, who do you got for? Because I think you and I both have this exact same top two.
Yeah, I have Steph. I have DeMar second. I tweeted at one point DeMar had a winner that I was like, it was his award. And someone responded very angry that, no, it's Steph, and like sent me some of the numbers. I was like, okay. Yeah, it's Steph, even though DeMar feels like he's had some big moments. There's also, there's obviously the NBA clutch stats, which are within 5 minutes in the within 5 points in the last 5 minutes of the game. You're not told that that's what you have to vote on for this award. You can kind of define clutch how you want. And we've talked about, I define clutch more broadly than that, because like 5 points, like 8 points is still clutch in the modern environment where teams are scoring 140 regularly and stuff like that. But there's also a site called Impredictable that measures clutch based on like, how much you swung the win probability late in games.
Okay.
And through that one, Steph and DeMar are like neck and neck in that one as well. DeMar is actually ahead, but you look at the sheer volume of what Steph has done, and it's Steph, man. I went Steph over DeMar. Don't think you can go wrong. Yeah. I had Shea third, and I think you could make a good case for Jokic third as well.
Yeah. I mean, that you had Shea third. I had Jokic third.
You had Steph DeMar 1-2?
As well, yeah. There's just nothing really around it. I mean, Steph has 186 points scored in the like the traditional clutch definition of plus or minus 5 points in the last 5 minutes. He's shooting 50% from the field, 46% from three, and 95% from the foul line. You look at DeMar, 177 points, also shooting 50% from the field, shooting 46.7% from three, slightly a better percentage, but of course he's only taken 15 as compared to 67 for Steph, and then DeMar is 88% from the foul line. So it's like literally like you're splitting hairs here, but I think Steph, I mean, honestly, like who knows? Maybe last week of the season, one of them hits a game winner and they swing it. It's that close.
Yeah.
But
it'll probably be Steph. It's also like it's healthy for the award in its infancy to have Steph win it one time.
Sure.
Not that media are voting with like the health of the award in mind, but it's just like it feels pretty fitting. It's also, it's really funny. So this Impredictable site will break down the clutch value based on different things as well. And like, Steph is way ahead of DeMar in shot making, but DeMar is like lapping the league in the value you added in clutch situations by getting to the free throw line.
Oh yeah.
So DeMar is like the unethical clutch player of the
he's
year.
A demon,
Steph's
man.
The ethical clutch player of the year.
We saw that in game two of the season. Yeah. DeMar has 73 free throw attempts in the clutch this season. I don't think anyone else is even remotely close. There's like one other player in the 60s and it's Trae Young. Okay, wow. It's really number one and two in terms of the grifters.
Yeah.
Okay. Sixth man of the year. This one will be a lot more varied, I would say. We both ended up with Naz Reid because we both really like Naz Reid. But who are the other candidates that you had for Sixth Man of the Year?
Yeah, first of all, a great scene at WrestleMania this weekend. Okay. It's in Philadelphia. You see a crowd shot, and someone just has a huge sign that just says Naz Reid.
Oh, really?
Just wow. At okay. WrestleMania, have no idea why. There's just a green, like a Timberwolves Naz Reid, green sign in the crowd that says Naz Reid.
Everyone loves Naz Reid.
Pushing the six moy agenda even at WrestleMania.
Six moy is crazy. What's wrong with six man? What happened to six man? It's such a cool name.
It's Naz Reid for me. I mean, the ability, I know it's supposed to be strictly off the bench, but I think part of it is your ability to step in and fill in as a starter part time.
I think it just clarifies
really valuable
that, like,
there too.
Yeah, like when Lamar Odom used to do it for the Lakers, for example, when like Bynum or Pau Gasol got out, it was like, oh yeah, he's the same level with those other guys, which is making it even more impressive that he's able to do it off the bench.
Yeah, rest of my ballot was Malik Monk, who scored a ton for Sacramento. He was like their third most important player overall after Fox and Sabonis, and his absence has coincided with them slowing down a little bit here. I had Norm third. I think he's been really important to the Clippers. Shot at an unbelievably high clip, which kind of lets those other guys breathe spacing-wise. It lets them do interesting things staggering-wise with Kawhi, Paul George, and Harden, where you've always got that extra shooter on the floor. You know, they trust him enough defensively to give those other guys breaks as well. Honorable mention, like Al Horford doesn't qualify anymore. He's started too many games at this point. Same, like Bogdan Bogdanovic. Technically qualifies. He's started 30 games now and 22 in a row.
Yeah, so, well, Trey's been out, yeah.
Yeah, so between that and the Hawks being so bad, I'm like, okay,
he's a killer off the bench.
Yeah. And then shout out to my guy, TJ McConnell, who actually has, like, really good numbers. Like, he's, like, 10-5 off the bench.
But he changes the whole pace of the game.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those bench players where once he comes into the game, somehow he's now centered around how the game's going to be played. It's him dribbling, going through the paint, then maybe turnaround jumper for like a 5-foot jump. We saw a bunch of that yesterday, last night. Him going at Bruce Brown, his former teammate.
It's like in, I was going to use a football running back reference, but we'll go with like since the Blue Jay season just started, it's like you have a guy who throws like 101 miles an hour, and then you pull him out of the game for a knuckleballer.
Yes, exactly. It's TJ McConnell is very much a knuckleballer.
Even though that's easier to hit, it should be easier to hit.
Yeah.
You're completely wired up to see 100 miles an hour now.
Calling him TJ Dickey from now on. I also had Cole Anthony in here. I feel like Cole Anthony does a really great job for an Orlando team that very much needs offense. And every time he comes into the game, I feel like, I don't know, him and Mo Wagner, but I'm not going to put Mo Wagner in here, but those are really good bench players on a really good team.
Cole Anthony, really good extension that they signed him to
before this year.
Like 3 years, $36 million they signed him to before this year.
I think, by the way, Kobe White's on the similar deal where he's making like basically mid-level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff, but just good foresight in terms of just like you have him in your program, he hasn't broken out yet. Sign him in and then obviously let the growth happen. The Raptors used to do it all the time with Norm, JV, guys like that, Terrence Ross. Yeah. Bobby Portis is another guy. Yeah. I have actually number two on my list just because I didn't really appreciate this, but first off, he's played 79 games. I think he's played every game this season. He's only started one game. He comes off the bench and like, whatever. Bobby Portis is like not a perfect player, but certainly a fan favorite. Like the crowd loves chanting for Bobby. And I don't know. He's pretty efficient. He creates a lot of his own offense as well.
14 points a game,
50% from the field, too. So pretty solid. And then real quickly, executive of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. Who cares?
Okay. What did you have, though? Come on.
I would go this award always gets like, it's always kind of given out as like a multi-year, like we lag behind or whatever.
Also, by the way, it's the executives voting on this award. Like, this is not the media voted award.
Yeah. So I'd go Thunder, just the track record over the last couple of years of drafting so well and the position they're set up into to continue to make moves and stuff like that. Just, I don't know, the striking the right mix of drafting well, making smart trades, staying flexible and things like that. You know, I probably would have been a little bit more aggressive at the trade deadline to round this out.
I was going
to
say,
but they're in a good spot.
Gordon Hayward, of all people, knocked them off the list for me.
Yeah, Celtics deserve,
for sure. Unfortunately,
some credit there as well.
Brad Stevens, I feel like the executive might low-key be better than Brad Stevens as the head coach.
Yeah. And then, the Wolves probably get an honorable mention here as well. Finding Naz Reid and signing him to a good deal. They're obviously cap leveraged into oblivion, but they've done a nice job for now figuring out the bench pieces. Mm-hmm. Nikhil, even a guy like Jordan McLaughlin, finding that who could be a depth piece, getting Conley
pretty
smartly. Yeah, it's, maybe they should have moved off of Kyle Anderson. But that's about the biggest nitpick you could come up with.
Yeah, I had on this list, I thought the Celtics should win it. Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest, man. Some of those trades, I mean, like getting Jrue Holiday, sneaking in there for that, you know, getting Kristaps Porzingis, like it's just consistently using first round picks, but getting great players out of them. You know what I mean? Like getting Derek White, getting Kristaps. Actually, didn't they get picks in addition to Kristaps in that deal?
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember they're at a pick surplus. Kristaps.
Yeah,
but Porzingis was on a bad deal.
That's fine.
Or what we thought was a bad deal given the injury concerns and stuff like that.
When you're a team that is looking to contend, you need a player to come in and actually fit and contribute. And the bar is already quite high, and he's done a great job with that. I think, this is Celtics' award to lose. But, I mean, I put Indiana in here. I thought just getting the Pascal trade done on a pretty cheap deal in terms of what they had to give up was really good.
I couldn't do it because of they also turned around and sold Buddy Hield at the same time for nothing.
Fair enough. And then I put San Antonio in here just because, honestly, I feel like for San Antonio, like, they spent all their time tanking for this moment, and it makes complete sense. Like, you're like, okay, yep, that was completely worth it. Yeah, we don't have DeJounte Murray or Jakob Poeltl or Derek White or whoever, but it's like, yeah, it's fine. We have Wemby from now until, like, 2040. Like, we're good. And
so you're giving you're giving the Spurs front office an Executive of the Year nomination because they won the lottery?
That's okay. No, but they also tanked to prepare to themselves for this exact moment.
Okay.
And they're now really well set up. I feel like Orlando should get a little bit of love here as well. But
yeah.
All right, we're going to get to the rest of the awards after this break with Mark Stein. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wim Luke, and to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. We are joined on the line once again every Wednesday by Mark Stein of The Stein Line. Stein, we already told you, but we're handing out NBA awards today on the program. We've already done six-man Executive of the Year, Clutch Player of the Year, and Most Improved Player. We've saved the big awards for you. First off, Stein, how are you doing? You all right? Good morning.
Good, guys. I'm good. How are you guys doing? Who won those awards?
We had the Celtics winning Executive of the Year, so I guess Brad Stevens. We both had Naz Reid winning Sixth Man of the Year. Steph, both of us winning Clutch Player of the Year. And then we split hairs with Kobe White and Tyrese Maxey for Most Improved. But, you know, I think it's a little bit more exciting, I think, when we get to this portion, when we get to Rookie of the Year is pretty, set. But Coach of the Year, I think there's lots of debate. Defensive Player of the Year, I think there's lots of debate. And also MVP could be a little bit debate, too. So that's where we're at. And, Mark, we'll start with you. I mean, Rookie of the Year, we all know it's Wemby. So do you have anything other than Wemby number one, Chet Holmgren number two, and Brandon Miller number three?
Well, look, I am playing along because, in truth, I fundamentally believe that you should not lock into any of these things until the season is over. Okay. I no longer officially vote, but when I did, I would take it all the way to the buzzer. That's just me. Everybody can do it the way they want to do it, but that's just me. But I understand you guys are doing a show on a Wednesday, so this is the show.
Yep. Thank you.
I mean, yeah, it's Wemby. I mean, it's going to be Wemby, and I think you're right. I think that will be the order if we're forecasting. I mean, Chet's had a fantastic season, and he's made a huge impact on all the winning that's going on in OKC. But, you know, Wemby, isn't there supposed to be a rookie wall? There does not appear to be any wall impeding this young man.
Well, the rookie wall's only 7'2", so Wemby can still, like, see over it and just shoot over top of it.
Yeah.
I mean, his last four games, I think, I had this, of course, now I lost it. He's averaging like 22, 15-ish rebounds, 7 assists, and 7 blocks. I mean, it's just
he's averaging 7 blocks. Come on.
Last four games. 23, 13, 7, and 6.5 blocks. I mean,
absurd.
He's finishing strong. He's the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. That stretch of games, by the way, doesn't even include the game he had 40, 20, and 7 the other week. That was prior to this streak.
He's got the most unique stat lines in the entire NBA, him and Josh Hart.
Yeah.
Josh Hart has some strange ones as well. But, no, Wemby is truly freakish what he's doing. I mean, I think the only question with Wemby is just, like, he's going to be the best Rookie of the Year since who? And I know I didn't prepare either of you for this question, but just off the top of your mind, in terms of like incoming rookies, first time you see them in the league and you're this amazed by them, like who? Who is that for you, Mark Stein?
I mean, I think LeBron is always the reflex answer and the safe answer, because I'll just go back to, I had the fortune of being at LeBron's first game in Sacramento. And that was against a Sacramento team that was not at the peak of its powers, but was still very strong.
Okay.
And LeBron was the best player on the court that night in his first game. And all the Kings vets were saying so, and that sticks with me. So, I, you know, that's probably the safest reflex answer.
Yeah, fair enough, honestly. I mean, the year Blake Griffin came into the league was also like, holy, like he was so good. As
I mean, even Luka's rookie year was like like it was a constant triple-double watch.
Right.
It's not like Wemby's doing stuff that, short of Blake or LeBron, we've like never seen before.
I remember that year because that was the year the Raptors won the championship. But Luka was playing against the Raptors, and he was getting guarded by Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. Two guys who, I mean, Kawhi, two-time defensive player of the year. Danny Green, like multiple-time all-defensive player against a rookie, and he had 35. It was like, whoa, okay, all right. And there was like nobody else on that team. With all due respect to Dirk, who I think was like 40 and like, you know, probably less mobile than any of the three of us, to be honest. But yeah, it was really impressive. Okay, that was pretty much, you know, a layup with the rookie of the year. Coach of the year, Mark, which way are you leaning? Because I know you've had a lot of these candidates on your podcast.
Yeah, I would say I would probably be leaning Chris Finch, but it's razor close for me between Finch, Mark Daigneault in Oklahoma City, and Jamal Mosley in Orlando. I think it's really tough to separate those three, but I would say heading into this final stretch here, the way Minnesota has not dropped at all since losing Karl-Anthony Towns, I think just gives Finch that slight edge. But look, a lot of people are going to vote. A lot of people are going to vote for Mark Daigneault, and I don't think there's been enough discussion about Jamal Mosley. And look, Orlando just took a really bad loss last night, but Orlando's been a top five defensive team all season long. Nobody was saying so coming into the season, and I think Mosley has to be a factor in this conversation.
Yeah, Mark, we had those same three in different orders. Will had it Mosley, Daigneault, Finch. I had it Daigneault, Finch, Mosley. You got it. It sounds like Finch, Daigneault, Mosley for the time being. I don't think there's any way you can go wrong there. I guess a week or two ago, we probably all would have had Ime Udoka as an honorable mention or maybe even on that ballot. But Houston, you know, they're just going to miss out here, and they're probably also going to miss out on the stat you were tracking about how many teams finished 42-40, Mark. But I guess, that coach of the year would be fascinating to see how those three guys shake out.
Yeah, and look, and this is where, you know, Missoula and Celtics fans have a real argument too, because for the same reasons why Jason Tatum will not even factor into our MVP discussion, I think it's probably going to work against Missoula as well. The Celtics have had this ridiculously good regular season, as good a regular season as you can probably have. And we look at their roster and say, you know, they're too good, so we're not going to consider Missoula for Coach of the Year, and we're not really going to give Tatum much of a sniff in the MVP race. I think you guys handled it well, though, by having Brad Stevens as executive of the year. I mean, their team is so deep that, you know, I think we discussed this last time. Derek White recently won player of the week in the East, and he's their fifth best player. Yeah. So they have quite a good thing going in Boston right now.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've done a good job. And I feel like, especially for coaches who have moved into that executive level, I feel like sometimes you see them lean too far. There was that stretch in the NBA probably about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago where like Stan Van Gundy, Tom Thibodeau, like I think Doc Rivers, like they started having these like dual roles, and I never really felt like they did a great job being GM versus being coach. But I feel like, yeah, Brad has done a really good job getting, you know, Joe Mazzulla exactly who he needs. I think for me, it's just the most impressive thing is getting a young team to really play defense. And that's a common theme for all three of these coaches, but especially so for Mosley. That's why I have him a hair ahead. But honestly, you really can't go wrong with any of these three candidates. So defensive player of the year. This one's going to be kind of fun because I don't think anyone really like wants to go with Rudy Gobert. I mean, like, Minnesota does have the best defense. He's by far, obviously, the best defender on that team. He's a huge difference maker.
It's just
not fun giving it to Gobert.
I went Gobert, and you know how that makes me feel. Like, it's there. And you, so Mark, we'll hand it to you in a second. So I went with Gobert. Will did the thing that he's not. Wemby himself was like, no, I'll give it to Gobert this year because he's not going to get another one. But Will said, nah, he's going Wemby. A lot of other potential names on there. Anthony Davis was on my ballot. Bam was on Will's ballot. What are you leaning for defensive player of the year?
Wait, whoever said this was supposed to be fun? This is not fun.
It's a sports radio. I don't have a ballot.
Level agony. This is root canal level agony. What do you mean fun?
Okay, all right. Hit me with the agony. I think the agony is seeing Rudy Gobert carry the defensive player of the year again, man.
And I mean the ballot in totality, not the defensive player of the year. Just year-end awards voting is.
Yeah.
I don't know that fun is the adjective I would apply. Rudy Gobert, I think, should win it and will win it. And look, there are limits to our there. I think there should be limits to our Wemby fawning. I mean, this roster around him is dreadful.
Yep.
And we're not going to hold it against him in the Rookie of the Year race. Like, his individual brilliance is going to basically basically foist its own eclipse on the Spurs record, and we're not going to pay attention to the standings there. But in the Defensive Player of the Year standings or category, I think we have to. And again, this is not his fault that the team around him is so substandard and he cannot guard all five players. And they're going to have to invent a new tracking stat for this young man in terms of shots altered, because it's not just the blocks every game. It's how many shots he's changing and discouraging and chewing guys out of the lane. But the Spurs, as a bottom feeder team, I don't know that we want to give him Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year in year one. He will win this award plenty in the future, so I think it will be Gobert.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is how many times will Wemby win Defensive Player of the Year? Because you've seen Ben Wallace won it four times. You see Dikembe Mutombo's won it four times. Rudy Gobert is about to be a four-time. That's why this sentence is so awkward for me. But in any case, is Wemby going to be the first ever five-time winner of Defensive Player of the Year in his career? I feel like
I think seven is a safe over-under.
Seven?
But, like, you just know. I was giving you a hard time. There is voter fatigue, and people do want to, they will get sick of voting for him as Defensive Player of the Year at some point, just as you are weary of even considering Gobert as your DPOY. So.
Yeah, it just doesn't sit right with me that, like, okay, Dwight Howard has three Defensive Player of the Years, and Rudy Gobert's going to have four. Like, I don't know why I'm so salty about this. Maybe it's because he started the pandemic.
But I think it really does speak to how good Rudy Gobert is defensively, that he's going to join that very elite class of four Defensive Player of the Year. And he's like, he does not have anyone out there advocating for him. It's just like so undeniable that he's that good defensively. There's nobody out there who's like, I'm a Rudy Gobert stan. You have to give Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year. There's no, like, he's not, I guess, like, he cried the one time with the All-Star stuff that got treated really weirdly. But, like, otherwise, he's not out there campaigning for it and stuff.
I think he just doesn't have the personality that, like, Dikembe was so charismatic. And Ben Wallace, in his own way, was very charismatic.
But his personality, to me, almost fits the Defensive Player of the Year more, because, like, your entire job is to make sure things don't happen. Like, his existence is to make the game less interesting when you're watching.
It does spoil the game for me. Yeah.
Well, that's what defense is.
If he was a Raptor, you guys would love him.
Of course, but he's not, and it's fine. It's not like we voted Jakob Poeltl for this. Although he is the Raptors' most important
defender. They're 4-25 without him now. So
yeah, that's an incredible number. Anyway, lastly, most valuable player. We talked about this previously on the show. I believe your three candidates. I think you said there's three legitimate candidates: it's Jokic, Luka, and Shea. Stein, I'm wondering how those three stack up relative to each other right now, with still a week left in the season.
I'm stunned it's such a runaway for Jokic. Everywhere I look, everyone I listen to, everyone who has publicly shared their leanings, it's Jokic in an absolute rout. And I think Luka has significantly closed the gap. I mean, I fully expect Jokic to win. But I'm really struggling. Obviously, I live in Dallas. Luka is the player that I watch the most, I see the most.
Yeah.
All of that factors in for me, surely, because I'm so familiar with you know, everything this kid is doing. But, I mean, his season is ridiculous. And the one knock on Luka that you could have had before was team success. Mm-hmm. But the Mavericks are going to win 50. They only have the fifth best record in the West, but that's the sixth best record in the league. Like, I mean, he's going to be the first player ever to average 33-8-8, and I'm pretty sure he's raised those numbers since that stat started circulating. Mm-hmm. He's going to win the scoring title. Like, I don't understand why it is a complete, you know, just non-race. And then Shai too. I mean, You know, I think Shai third. I don't think Shai quite has a stronger case than Luka, but you know, Shai's case is strong too. I mean, the Thunder went from 10 to a contender to number one. And you know, he's obviously the driving force behind that, but it's been decided already that it's Jokic.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't help Shai's case that he's been out with injuries a couple in this key stretch here where people really turn their focus away from everything else towards the award voting. It's not as prominent. I think, honestly, if I were to just offer a suggestion as to why people really, really so heavily favor Jokic, it's like the safest option because you know that he's an amazing player. You know that he's coming off a Finals MVP. The last thing you want to do is give the guy an MVP and then feel silly about what they do.
Champion retains on a draw.
Yeah, exactly, in this case. So I think it's just like the tiebreaker goes to whoever will make them feel the safest. But, I mean, like, there's nothing not safe about voting Luka, for example.
I mean, yeah. The fact that we're in a time where voting the league's leading scorer on a 50-win team who's also averaging 9 rebounds and almost 10 assists is not safe is just wild. It speaks to just how good this MVP class is. And, like, there are going to be Knicks fans who are like, how come Jalen Brunson is in this conversation? And, like, he's going to be on ballots as fourth and fifth.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a very fun year.
Yeah, I would like to see Brunson end up in the top five. I think that would be... Because I do agree. I think he does deserve it. And again, you know, Tatum, it is such a tough one on how you judge him. I mean, Boston's season is so good. I mean, Tatum should be on the ballot. But then, you know, Giannis's individual numbers are ridiculous, too. I mean, the man is shooting better than 60% from the field, which is just, you laugh when you say that out loud. But Milwaukee's season has been so tumultuous and so disappointing to the point that there was a stunning midseason firing of the coach. I do think voters are going to factor that in. So I'm really interested to see where Giannis ends up on the ballot, where Tatum ends up on the ballot, and can Brunson sneak in there? And I guess those will have to be the sources of intrigue because, again, I mean, it's, you know, everywhere I look, it's basically been decided that it's Jokic already.
Oh, yeah, it's 100% Jokic. And actually, I also voted Jokic as MVP here. But, Mark, we appreciate you.
It's not like he's a bad pick. The man is the most feared, you know, the most feared individual force in the world. I mean, and, you know, the Nuggets might win the West, and he's had another incredible season, and Jamal Murray's missed about 25 games. So, I mean, Jokic is a very worthy MVP. That's not what I'm saying. You know, I'm just saying I'm stunned that it is just a non-race.
Fair enough.
Because I think Luka is right there.
Okay. All right. Well, Mark, we appreciate you. Thank you for all your time joining us this season. And, all the best. And look forward to the playoffs.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, guys. Be good.
All right, before we go, Raptors play again tonight.
It is time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. The Raptors in Brooklyn are 10-point underdogs, over-under set at 222.5. Because the Raptors are on a back-to-back, we don't have an injury update, but we assume the guys who were out continue to be out. Quickly's probably back in tonight.
Right.
Since I got yesterday was RJ and or Kelly probably rest today. Yeah. We'll see how that shakes out. Right. On the Nets side, no Finney Smith, Beta, Diop, Simmons, Dennis Smith Jr. Claxton and Cam Johnson are probable, so Cam Johnson missed their last game. He could be back in the mix for them.
Okay.
Here's an interesting one for you. The Nets are bad.
Yeah.
They've won 5 of their last 8.
Okay.
But those wins are against Toronto, Washington, Detroit, Chicago, and Indy. So not exactly
a
lot
of
great
wins in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Two okay wins in there. They are the best team in the league, though, at beating up on other bottom 10 teams. So if we look at the 10 teams in the bottom of the league for net rating,
wow, they're last year's Raptors?
Brooklyn is 15-10 against the other teams in the bottom 10. Yeah. Chicago has a better record, but Brooklyn has like a they have a plus six net rating against bottom 10 teams. They're the biggest swing in terms of performance, bottom 10 versus the rest of the league. So they are the team that plays better. They don't play down to their competition. They just play down to better competition.
I mean, it's such a big line, but like, I get it. Like, I do anticipate RJ and Kelly to be out for this one. I'd be pleasantly surprised if they were available. The game doesn't really matter. Raptors are locked into six in the lottery odds. I just don't trust Brooklyn's offense enough to, like, get it to a line this high. I mean, even the over-under at 222 feels high, but, like, I don't know. I don't think you should bet on the Raptors right now, to be honest.
Yeah, and to your point about the standings, as long as the Raptors don't win two games and the Grizzlies lose out, the Raptors are locked into six. So that was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance.
Yep, and that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spicy Soup. Time to get fired up. Thanks once again to producer on my mom, Bird Wizard, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olnick Davis, Jared Manitev, for helping behind the scenes. Big thanks to Mark Stein for joining us. Fill up our award ballots, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.